What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Everyman Drummer Podcast. I am your host, Will, and today we got a few things to talk about today. I wouldn't say it's a jam-packed show, but it's going to be a pretty good one, to say the least. Perusing again on the YouTube, and I came across this one guy, pretty interesting stuff on there. His name is, check out his channel, I'll leave the link in the show notes. As per usual, Samus66, I think that's what it is. Let me see. Put it in here real quick here and see what we find. Anyway, I came around. Yeah, there he is, 66 Samus right there. I'll leave his links up in my show notes description for you guys to check it out. The guy puts out new videos every Tuesday. He's a metal drummer, and he explores lots of different things, talks about a whole bunch of different stuff. One of the videos that I watched recently was he was talking about the blast beats, and everyone out there who's listening to this, they all know what the blast beats are. I've attempted a couple of them, failed miserably. Still try to do them, but I'm not as quick as how a typical blast beat would be. Okay, and watched his videos. Very informative guy, very, very educated guy there, drumming wise, and everything else he does in there. He's got broad variety of stuff that he does. He does a bunch of metal drum covers as well. You check it out. Got a couple of them by Metallica up there. But I'm sure he plays them a hell of a lot better than Lars Ulrich does. I hadn't get a chance to see any of them yet. But couple of the videos that I was watching, and he took his own take on classic songs like Smoke on the Water, Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know. And what he did was very interesting stuff. He took those songs that we all know, and he started playing blast beats over top of them. Very, very interesting. It took a different take on a lot of the stuff that he was talking about. And he, it just expands the idea of what we drummers can do. Nothing always has to be, nothing's set in stone. There's no rules. We know that. We drummers know that. There are no rules. So let's take a quick listen here. I don't know if you can hear it. That's freaking crazy right there. Just watching this, and it's like, you'll never hear that song the same again after you hear, you watch the video. I'll leave, like I said, I'll leave the description, his page up on the show notes. It's pretty cool what he's doing, and it's just very creative. Music and popular music that we hear today, it's supposed to be taken, you're not supposed to take it at face value. That this is the law of the land. This is never the law of the land when it comes to playing music like that. Yeah, it was written like that. Yeah, it's going to be remembered like that. Of course, that's what made it famous. But when you do something like this and add your own spill on it, that really puts a different take on everything for it. Like I said, this guy, 66 Samus, check it out. That was pretty cool, and it was a quick 2-minute video right there on doing the blast beats with that. It's completely crazy. like I said, music is written as a guide. Yes, it's written with that intention of what we heard it already. What it's supposed to sound like. Yeah, maybe, perhaps. But then you take a twist on it and you do something like that, it makes it completely new. It grabs your attention. It draws the fans in. And that's what it's all about. You got to get your fans to come back for more, wanting more. Here's the other one. He did the Smoke on the Water with blast beats. Pretty incredible. This is freaking nuts right here. Look at that. You'll never hear that music the same again. Once you hear it this way, you'll never hear it. You'll never not hear it that way. Incredible, incredible stuff. He actually is playing a little bit of a groove here. The double ride right there. Insane, insane what you're looking at and what you'll be checking out. Again, show notes, we'll have the links to his page up on, in the show notes, we'll have the link up to his page. Subscribe to him, like him. Great guy, very informative. I'm not going to unhear that. You guys aren't going to unhear that either. Show of hands or hit me up on my DMs on Twitter and Instagram. That's the basic one. Getting back to that topic of blast beats, have I played them before? Yes, I have. Had I played them for a long period of time? No, I don't have that. I'm not a double bass player before anybody asks. I remember watching a video with, it may have been like a clinic, and Gavin Harrison was up there. And he specifically goes, I am not a double bass player by any means. He's like, me playing these double bass beats and playing them, trying to make a fool out of myself, all while in front of Derek Roddy in front of him. And we all know who Derek Roddy is. Fantastic metal player that they have that's out there. But highly recommend this guy, 66 Amos, out there. Check him out. He's got a whole thing on blast beats and how to play them. Blast beats, it's something that, once you nail it down, it's like you'll start playing them. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Not only are they cool to hear, but playing them is fucking hard. Especially sustaining them for an entire show if that's all you're doing. That's incredibly hard. But referring back to Todd Zuckerman about using licks like that, you need to play it with feeling, conviction. Make the listener just... You want to smack them in the face when you do a lick like that. He refers to Tony Williams, the Babluj lick or something like that. And he overuses it. And he's proud of overusing. There's licks that I overuse, mainly the Dave Weckl lick. We'll get into a tutorial on that on the YouTube page at some time in the future. Check it out and stay tuned for that. But we're all guilty of overusing those licks and overdoing it. Especially once you learn it, you're like, oh, man. I mean, check it. I mean, when I first learned the Dave Weckl lick, and we all know what I'm talking about there. I used it in everything and overused it. I'm guilty of overusing the Dave Weckl lick. How many of you are guilty of that you learn a lick and then you overuse it? I'm sure we all are. Again, hit me up in the DMs, Twitter and Instagram, at The Real Will Geronimo. Check it out. But blast beats, he has a whole thing on the different types of blast beats. I only know, like, the first couple of them. Some of them with the double pedal, or some of them with the two bass drums, and some of them just using the single bass drum or whatever. But it's a neat tool to have in your arsenal. He's got a whole bunch of stuff here. His drum video, he's got a whole bunch of drum covers. He did a cover called Africa. He did Toto's Africa on here. He did Deck the Halls. What the hell's this? Let's check this one out. Let's see. Let's see what this is all about. Stupid YouTube ads. YouTube ads. They suck. But all right, here, let's take a listen to the Deck the Halls with Blast Beats. Deck the Halls with Blast Beats. Let's see. Well, I'm not sure if you guys can hear any of this stuff, but gets you in the Christmas spirit right there with that. More like a kick you in the face, suckers out there. Merry Christmas to all of y'all. It's more like a Merry Christmas to you all when you hear that. I said this guy's got a whole bunch of nice stuff up there. I would say nice. It's pretty damn. It's good, man. It's good. And I was, like I said, I just happened to come across him because the video that got me was what got me to it, to explore his channel. I think it was The Truth About Drum Triggers. And a lot of people will think that drum triggers is cheating. And you know what? It's, I guess, I've never used them. Never used drum triggers before. I wanted to indulge in it. Probably is a better way of, you could use those instead of miking. You go right into the board or sample, and it goes straight to the board. You don't have to worry about mic bleed, I guess. I've never used them. I wouldn't mind to try them out. I mean, you can sample whatever the hell you want on them. He had it on his snare drum where he sampled the fart sounds, and every time he would hit the snare drum, instead of a snare, you would hear a fart, which was pretty fucking crazy. But that's what caught my attention, was he was talking about the truth about drum triggers and how a lot of people like to think that drum triggers is a way of cheating. Now, when I was on tour with the band Ignescent back in 2016, 2014, somewhere around there, we had the privilege of opening up for Flyleaf. And I got to talk to James, their drummer. I had to actually sit behind his kit. And I saw drum triggers on there. Plus, he had mics on there. And I asked him, like, what's with the drum triggers? And he basically said he just uses the drum triggers as a gate to gate off the mics. And that's why I was like, you don't have to use the drum triggers to sample anything. You use them for processing, and you get a cleaner sound going through your mics. You know, it doesn't have all of that bleed going through there. So this guy was talking about the drum triggers and how you can use them for anything. And, you know, they're not used just for cheating. I've seen guys, they'll mic up the entire drum kit. Some of the metal guys will mic up their entire drum kit. And we all know the metal drummers have the massive kits. And some of them, they just won't. They'll trigger the snare and the bass drums because we know that's what you want to hear. It's gonna, and what they do is they process that, and it throws out that sound that they want, that metal sound. Metal has that signature bass drum sound. It's like, it's just a snapping sound. So triggers being used that way is a good thing. And that's what he was talking about. It's not cheating. You don't just set the trigger. You hit it once and you got 1,000 beats coming out of one kick. You use it for anything else. And that's what caught my attention with this guy. And then you fall down the rabbit hole and you want to check out everything else. And then he did one which was very brave. You know, it's just like if I were to go and do one, play metal, that's very brave of me. He did one where he's playing metal drummer plays jazz. And he did the Caravan drum solo on there. And he was actually, I really enjoyed that. He actually, to step out, this goes back to what I was talking about before. All the drummers out there got to step out of your comfort zone. I've done it many times. Step out of that comfort zone and try exploring the other genres, the other techniques of playing. And he was there playing jazz, and it's just like, it actually sounded really good. I got to give the guy a lot of props for doing that. One, you're fucking brave for doing it. You know, there's most guys out there, oh, they don't know jazz. I don't know what that is. What do you mean you don't know what that is? Most of the modern music comes from that. It's influenced by that. A lot of the players that you listen to, go back, listen to John Bonham, influenced by Max Roach and Art Blakey, guys like that. One of John Bonham's early drum solos was influenced by Max Roach. He plays that the drum also waltzes. Check it out. I look at John Bonham, not only is he the most influential rock drummer of all time. Everybody's changed to rock music. Most people, they discover when they're out of their realm, they discover it's going to be John Bonham, and that changes their life. For me, obviously, it was Neil Peart. But if you listen to John play, it's a lot bluesy and a lot jazz. Because that's what he grew up listening to, those guys. So to say that a metal drummer can't do it, that's just not correct. Obviously, this guy did it. 66 Samus did it. And I applaud him for that. And it was great. Unbelievable. He thought he was going to fail. I didn't think he failed. I think he did a great job. Fantastic job out there. But, again, link to his YouTube page will be in the show notes. Check him out. You won't forget it. You're not going to regret that one. Not only is there great informative stuff on there. He talks about, he does his own reviews on some of the products that he uses. He has a little hint of comedy in there, which keeps, you know, everything flowing. Because there's guys that will just be boring and just talk like this all the time. Blah, blah. You got to add that other element of humor in there that it just to make it that more exciting, the more grab your attention. So I like the captioning up here for his blast beats. Today I show you all the different kinds of blast beats. Hopefully I got them all. Blast responsibly and be sure to keep in touch with me below. He's got a Patreon that you can support if you guys are into that stuff. But like I said, this guy's pretty good. This guy's really good. I highly recommend him. Check it out. Check him out. Other news today. So over the weekend, I came across articles on my Google feed. And many of you probably saw this. But you want to own a piece of history if you can afford it. Neil Peart's Silver Surfer cars are going on the auction block. Right here, this is under the driving.ca. These are some of his prized cars. Now, a lot of people not all, a lot of that know or don't know about Neil. He's an avid car guy. He's a car nut. Read it in some of his books. He talks about cars. Some of the earlier pictures of him, if anybody has that, the tour guide from the Test for Echo Tour. There's a picture of him as a young Neil playing Red Sparkle Stewarts. And on the poster on the wall in his bedroom there's a racing Corvette. He was already a car enthusiast back then. Fortunately for him, he was able to bring a lot of those cars that he dreamed about and was able to own them. So it's been over a year since Neil passed back in January 2020, and his cars are going up for auction. And very noble, and all the money that the Peart family is getting from them are going right to charities. That's, you know, that's just the way that he operated. You know, a lot of these cars that he had, he didn't restore them. He bought them restored. I'm sure that he would have loved to do it, but his busy schedule with Rush and then writing, recording, touring, that vicious cycle. Yeah. He probably more than likely wanted to spend his downtime with his family, as did the other two. So actually having the time to actually restore a vehicle, he probably didn't have it and didn't care to have it, probably. I don't know. They lived private lives, which is, you know, a lot of the times, us as fans, we have no right to go into their life and say we're entitled to know everything about them. No, you're not, man. No, you're not. You are not entitled to know anything about your favorite superstars or your heroes. They will tell you if they want. You don't go out there and insult anybody or get in contact with somebody in their family and tell them that they owe you, because they don't owe you jack shit. Now, you want to go out there and you want to own part of that piece of history, here's your chance right here. I saw the thing come up. Now, I'm one of the biggest fans of Neil and Rush. Self-proclaimed biggest fans of Neil and Rush. Would I love to? I would honestly, if I had the extra money to buy some of these cars, I would buy at least one of them just to say I own Neil Peart's car. How about that? How about that? The one that I would buy is the 63 Chevy Corvette split window. He has a 63 Chevy Corvette split window, a 64 Shelby Cobra 289, the only one out of this collection that is not silver. The 64 Aston Martin DB5, that's another one that I would love to pick up. A 1964 Series 1 E-Type. A 73 Maserati Ghibli 4.9 SS Coupe. A 65 Maserati Mistral convertible. 1970 Lamborghini Miura P400S. These are some of his prized collections of his cars. And seen some of them in the tour books. He's talked about a few of them here and there. But that's not all of the cars. Those are like his gems. All silver, the red interior. He had a thing for red. I remember reading in one of his books. And maybe I even saw it in the Modern Drummer magazine. I may have been on his web. I don't know. But he had a red Porsche that he sold to Matt Scannell. That's how he met Matt Scannell from Vertical Horizon. Matt Scannell bought a red Porsche. There's something about the color red. When I think of red, a lot of people think of fire engines. Yes, I do too still think of fire engines with red. But I also think of Neil. Red drums, red sparkle drums, the candy apple red Tamas. You know, the Snakes and Arrows kit that was red. You know, red Porsche. A lot of the interior of these cars are red. Hold Your Fire's album cover is red. Yeah. It's Clockwork Angels is red. Man, there's a lot of red going on over there. Red Sector A. A lot of the album of Grace Under Pressure is red. Just saying, he probably loves the color red. It's a nice color, depending on how you use it. But yeah, if you want to own a piece of history, go for it. If you've got the extra means of buying and spending money, these cars all go on auction between August 13th and 14th during the Monterey Car Week in California. All of the proceeds will be donated to charity. That's right here. First up is a 1963 Chevy Corvette split window estimated to sell between $150,000 and $180,000. Car's worth a lot. And one, it's a rare car. It's a Corvette split window. Not a lot of those are driving around. I saw one a few months ago roaming around my neighborhood. Just about shit my pants. Never really seen one up close before. I love Corvettes. I love me some Corvettes. It says right here, the only car not finished in silver is Peart's 1964 Shelby Cobra 289. Here's the chassis number right here, CXS224. Expected to sell between $900,000 and $1 million. These are some fancy cars, man. And this is not all of it. He has his regular daily cars, plus his cars up in Canada, probably, that he has. And his motorcycles. And I know one of the motorcycles, I think, is in Indianapolis with one of the drum sets. So, with that, I actually was able, I got in contact with Neil's niece, who I've been friends with for the past year and a half now. And we were just chit-chatting. And I asked her, I just out of curiosity, have you ridden in any of the cars that are on the auction block? And she told me that she did, which was pretty damn cool. And I told her, I told my family this, if any of his drum sets ever go on the auction block, sign me up. I will take out a loan just to own one of them drum sets. I do not care. I'll even use them because that's what they're there for. And that's what Neil did with these cars. His book, Traveling Music, he talks about some of these rides in there. That one's mainly with his BMW Z8. It's pretty impressive right here. He drove a lot of these. And that's what, you know. It's why buy a car if you're not going to drive it? If you're going to spend all that money on it, drive the damn thing. Enjoy it. But yeah, check that out right there. You know, if anybody out there is a car collector and has the expendable cash to actually go and make a bid on some of these, more power to you. More power to you. Just crazy. I forgot what the charity is for, but know that the money is going off to charity. It's the way that that he would want it. Probably the way the Peart family wants it anyway. Everybody, you know, they don't need any more money. You know what? It's none of your business what they do with it. If they want to keep it for themselves, that's their business. If they want to give it away to charities to support causes, that's their business. We shouldn't be telling anybody what to do if they're doing that, especially if you're infamous like that. I remember one of the quotes that... I was reading last year when he passed, and it took me back. And his niece had said, the world lost the legend, but I lost my best friend, my pen pal, my confidant, my uncle. And a lot of the time, us as fans, we forget that that's who they are. We look at them, and we put them up on these pedestals, and we forget that they are exactly that. So yeah, check that out. Just Google it, Neil Peart, and it comes up right away. Like I said, these cars hit the auction block between August 13th and 14th during the Monterey Car Week. It'll probably be televised. You know, if you've got like the NBC Sports Channel or even Motor Week Television or Auto Motor Trend TV or whatever it is, right? Probably be televised. Be interesting to see what these things go for, and if any fans out there will be purchasing them. That would be pretty cool. That would be pretty cool. So just a reminder, if you want to start a podcast, check out Anchor.fm. The easiest way, most productive way to start your own show. You record, you upload, they send it out. They do the work for you in conjunction with Spotify. They will also send it out to the other podcast forums out there and get you, you know, spread out. You could even get paid for it if you've got sponsored segments. But check them out. If you've got a topic, check it out. Anchor.fm, the easiest, simplest way to get started with a podcast. So that's what we've got for this episode today. Thanks for sticking around if you haven't. If you've come back, welcome back. If you've left, then we'll see you later. We'll see you on the flip side. Check out the YouTube channels for updates. You know, I'm on my Twitters and Instagrams. More Twitter than the Instagram, but hit me up in the DMs. You guys got show ideas. Oh, we got one more segment before we cut out. It's the What's in My CD Player segment. And this week it was Carlos Santana's Supernatural album. Although I hate this album, it's still a pretty good one. The more traditional Santana songs are the ones that I like. When you've got, like, the Dave Matthews song is okay. The Everlast song, Put Your Lights On, sucks. Smooth was overplayed, and that's the one that really blew up. Maria Maria by Wyclef Jean, that was pretty good. Corazon Espinado by Maná. Now, that one's a good one. Again, the more traditional songs by Santana on here are good. It's the other ones where you got all these other guys, you know, looking for a quick Grammy or whatnot. And I think this album won 9 Grammys. It came out, what, back in 1999? So already 21 years ago? 22 years ago? Incredible. Like I said, it's not one of my favorites. I think it absolutely sucks, but it's in my CD player. Check it out. Carlos Santana Supernatural, tracks 1 through 13. Track 1, one of my favorites, because, again, it sounds like traditional Santana. The one with Maná, number 9, Corazon Espinado, that one sounds more traditional Santana, so that's another one of those tracks that's good. Then you got your shit like Love of My Life with Dave Matthews and Put Your Lights On with Everlast and, you know, Smooth. There was nothing really wrong with that song. It was just overplayed, I guess. And overplayed because Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20, they were the biggest thing back around then. I believe it was in 98 when the Matchbox 20 album came out with Push or something like that, right around that time. But it was a good gimmick. It was a good gag when it came out back in 99, and then he did it again with Sting and everybody else or whoever else was on that album, which that album absolutely just sucked as well. But for right now, this album, Santana Supernatural, is in my CD player. That's what's in my CD player. Really, that's all I got to say about it. Not one of my favorites. Take it as it were. Take it at face value. But that's where we're at. So, all right, I think I've done enough of there of informational vomit. Check out 66 Samus. I'll leave the link in the show notes, and I'll leave the link to the Neil Peart article in the show notes as well. Check it out. Until next time, we'll see you later. Everybody keep drumming and keep those beats coming. Take care.